Hello everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Alan J. Pakula's 1990 film, Presumed Innocent. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
In the words of Raul Julia, what a colossal blunder.
Indeed. He was awesome in this movie.
I know, I love Julia.
All right, so we'll talk.
I was pronouncing the director's name as Pukla. So
I was wondering if it was like a Dracula thing, like Pakula.
But the House of Pakul.
I'm gonna go with Pakula. So
right.
We'll see.
Count Pakula.
Indeed.
Yeah, works. Well, if you guys, I like that.
What?
I like that. Go with that.
Which one, Pakula?
Count Pakula.
Okay, sure thing. If you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I have the character name game for you.
Oh.
Kate Lloyd. Kate Lloyd is what you're thinking of. So, at the end of the show, as always, you have to come back and try to guess what movie Kate Lloyd is from. Keeping in mind there has to be some sort of connection to a movie that came out in theaters this past weekend.
Let's I have no idea who's in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, your instincts are leading you in the right direction. That's all I've got to say.
Is it a famous figure?
Maybe. So let's transition into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any kind of cool events we've been to or anything like that. So, Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this past week?
Yeah, on our long-standing series, the Friday the 13th movies, finally checked out Part 4, which, I guess, have you ever seen this one?
No.
No? It was subtitled The Final Chapter, which means that Jason, I guess, doesn't come back or something like that, even though there's like five other movies that he's in.
Maybe he was intended not to come back?
Maybe. But this one, again, fairly similar formula to the rest of the films. A bunch of kids go to like a cabin, and Jason, if you remember from last time, Part 3, which was in 3D, he had been axed in the head, and so he got his hockey mask too. So he has his hockey mask, brand new. He gets axed in the head, so you get like a little like cut into like the hockey mask,
like a chip out of it or something.
Yeah. And he hangs from a barn, like she hangs him by the neck in a barn. And she comes down, and he's not on the rope anymore. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts hallucinating that he keeps coming after her. Spoiler alert, it's just like the first movie. And then at the very end, she's in a boat, and the mom's corpse pops up and tries to get her. So, another spoiler there. And so,
no need for the constant spoiler warnings. It's okay.
The fourth one starts out with a bunch of kids going to, you know, I think Crispin Glover's one of the kids. This one's actually a lot better than the third one because it's back to the formula of like, okay, these kids are just hanging out and there's a killer after them, as opposed to the third one, which was very gimmicky.
Yeah, I think you were talking about how the third one didn't really make a ton of sense because the first two, like, the kids were kind of encroaching on Jason's territory, right? Like,
we're
messing around at Camp Crystal Lake, and you're like, well, of course he's going to come after you because that's his, you know, those are his stomping grounds. And then in the third one, it was just like he went after a group of kids for some random reason?
Right, exactly. Okay. Pretty much the same in the fourth one, too, but I think they're closer to Crystal Lake now than they were in the third movie. So I think it's getting kind of to the point where it's like if you come anywhere within a couple miles of Crystal Lake, like that's enough to make a movie.
Yeah.
Corey Feldman's in it. He plays this little kid, and I'm going to spoil this one too.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Feldman ends up killing Jason, basically. So a little kid kills Jason.
I'm going to throw a spoiler alert on that spoiler alert and say that I'm guessing Jason isn't actually dead.
That spoiler alert on the spoiler alert is perfectly justified because I definitely know that's not the case, or I definitely know that is the case because Friday the 13th Part 6 is titled Jason Lives.
All right. So,
I guess the fifth one, which is not available on Instant Watch for some reason, does not feature Jason, although I've read the synopsis and it does feature the little kid, like, hallucinating, possibly becoming a new killer, but I guess they were like, F this, let's just bring Jason back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing how they explain that away, considering I've seen Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell, and I'm pretty sure that doesn't work either, so we'll see.
Okay.
So a little update there for those of you that are keeping up by not watching the movies and just listening to us talk about them. There you go. Also watched a movie called Dracula 2000. Can you guess what year this was made in, Ben?
1990.
Oh, not even close. 2000.
Okay.
Features Gerard Butler as Dracula.
Yeah, I remember that.
Somebody Plummer. Is his name? Is that his name? I don't know.
Christopher Plummer?
Maybe. Was that?
Really old? Know. Really old?
Yeah, he was old, yeah. Who else was featured in this?
I'm just like Christopher Plummer, really old dude. That's the only thing. Like, he just won an Oscar last year. Like, he's got one of the most, like, distinguished careers in Hollywood history. And I'm just like, yeah, really old guy, you know?
Yeah.
That's one him. Hair, probably.
He played Van Helsing, which this was kind of actually a really cool movie. It felt like a Blade movie where mm-hmm. it was like action-packed vampires kind of thing, but the mm-hmm. story was kind of interesting because Van Helsing had basically put Dracula into like a super secure coffin area, like bank vault, and so all these people thought he was hiding all these jewels and treasures in this bank safe thing, and then they find out it's just a coffin, and of course the teenagers or whoever they are accidentally opens the coffin, and it's like Gerard Butler is Dracula, which is kind of weird. But he kind of looks like freaking Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, because he wears like all black with a trench coat. So I just kept yelling Keanu every time I saw him. But like the storyline is, and again, I'm just going to spoil these movies because I don't feel like beating around the bush. Like, so presumably, and you don't find this out to the end of the movie, Dracula is actually Judas from the Bible stories.
What?
So, yeah, so he doesn't like crosses because he didn't like Jesus back in Bible times. And he's opposed to silver because that's what the coins were made out of when betrayed Jesus. And so he's kind of, he doesn't like the element silver. And so there's this bizarre scene that looks really out of place with the rest of the movie where they show like the three crosses and like Gerard Butler's just kind of kneeling in front of one of the crosses with Jesus on it, which technically I think he was dead before that point.
Yeah, I think he went and hung himself.
Continuity error. Yeah, well then he goes and hangs himself and the rope breaks and he becomes Dracula. And so he's just around for the next 2,000 years, doing Dracula stuff.
Okay.
But we all know Dracula actually came from Vlad the Impaler.
Right.
Ruled in like the 1400s in like Eastern Europe somewhere. So Dracula 2000 taking a little tendency towards the what's that take where you take liberty with something?
Yeah, creative licensing. Creative liberty.
Basically switched up the Bible story there, pal. But interesting nonetheless, kind of an interesting take.
Okay. Is it more of like an action movie or how would you compare it to like Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula movie?
Oh, Bram Stoker?
Yeah.
Bram Stoker is a lot more like dramatic. This was actually just kind of like a popcorn flick, like action, maybe like a Rush Hour film without the jokes.
Okay.
I don't know. It's along those veins. Like it's kind of suspenseful, but it's more weird and just, karate and stuff.
Okay.
And it takes place in New Orleans too. So of course during Mardi Gras.
Weird. All right.
And there's just vampires like just trying to take care of everybody in Mardi Gras.
I feel like that probably happens every year, like people dress as vampires legitimately at Mardi Gras. But
yeah, and there's a girl who was actually has the essence of Dracula, even though she wasn't bitten by Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And she works at a Virgin record store, and she always wears a shirt that says Virgin on it, mm-hmm. which I guess is supposed to be funny.
Yeah, pretty on the nose there.
Yep, so yeah, that's what I've been watching this week.
Okay. Well, this week I wanted to talk about two things quickly because I don't have a lot to say about them, and also because I'm sort of hungover from last night.
Hey, me too.
Forgive any sort of whatever.
Hungover from the night before too. Can't wait till we hang out in LA, brother.
Weekend Warriors. Oh yeah. So we should mention that Tyler is going to be coming out to Los Angeles to visit, and we're going to be doing recording this podcast with both of us in the same room for the first time. So, no,
I've actually been in the room before, but for the 100th episode, Ben.
Yeah, for the 100th episode, and also you coming out here for the first time, because I've been back to Florida a few times where we've done like holiday episodes and stuff like that. But
yeah, Super RoboCop, no, Super Cop.
And
Rumble in the Bronx, mm-hmm. and Bangkok Danger. No, Bangkok Knockout. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Signs as well.
I was not there for that.
You weren't there for that. Okay.
That was Jared and Timmy T.
Yes, it was. All right. Anyway,
what happened to them? Are they still alive?
I think so. Yeah, pretty sure.
That's good enough for me.
I introduced my girlfriend and my roommate to Newsies, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. Tyler, have you gotten around to seeing Newsies yet?
Yeah, were there a bunch of kids and newspaper men in like the 30s? No, I haven't checked that out.
It's pretty entertaining, I've got to say. It's a Disney musical. There's actually not that many musical numbers in it. There's probably only like, I don't know, 7 songs or something in the whole movie.
That's enough.
Yeah, I mean,
if it's more than one, it's a musical.
But when you're watching it, it doesn't seem like... Basically, the story is good enough to kind of cancel out the fact that, like, you know, the awareness that you're sitting there watching a musical.
Okay.
I think, anyway.
Okay. Fair enough.
Christian Bale is in it, which is kind of entertaining to watch now, because this movie came out in 1992.
Buy this newspaper. Extra, extra.
I wish he did that back then. When he was like 17 or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a really entertaining movie. Bill Pullman is in it, Robert Duvall. It's got a great cast. And the music is actually really good. Like, for the few songs that are in it, they'll get stuck in your head. And it's got some kind of interesting things to say about, you know, like your 15 minutes of fame and kind of a temporary celebrity and things of that sort. Because these kids band together to form a union, basically, and kind of take on the big juggernauts in the newspaper industry back then, which was like William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer. So there's a lot of kind of period piece cameos, like Teddy Roosevelt making an appearance and stuff like that in there. It's kind of ridiculous, but for a... Disney movie from the early 90s, you know, it's got this kind of like gosh darn gee whiz gee willikers kind of like innocence to it that you don't really see in a lot of movies these days. So I think for people who grew up watching this movie, it's got to be, you know, pretty beloved, I'm guessing. But I saw it for the first time, whatever it was, last year, whenever I talked about it on this podcast for the first time. And I liked it then, and I liked it, you know, this week when I watched it again. So check out Newsies if you can. It's, I think, available only through the disc version of Netflix at this point. But yeah, so there's that. And then also yesterday, the Los Angeles Film Festival is still going on out here. Today, actually, Sunday, is the closing day of the festival. They're closing it with Magic Mike, which I did not get tickets to, unfortunately.
Channing Tatum's stripper movie?
Yep. So that should be pretty ridiculous.
You have been talking nonstop about that film.
I have not, but our friend Vince and Bernsey and stuff over there have been talking about it for a
while. Yeah, they have.
So they are.
They're claiming it's the film to end all films.
They've got a massive hard on for Channing Tatum over there. So, anyway. LA Film Fest is wrapping up. One of the last movies they played there was this Swedish film called Snabba Cash, a.k.a. Easy Money. excuse me.
Snabba Cash.
When this movie came out, a bunch of American studios got into this big bidding war for the remake rights. And I think Warner Brothers has it now, and Zac Efron is supposed to be starring in a remake of it, which I actually think is going to be really good, because I shockingly have come to like Zac Efron as an actor, even though I've only seen him in a couple things. I have not seen him.
Musical too?
No, I haven't seen any of the High School Musical movies, but all the stuff that he's done afterwards, he's been taking steps, I think, to kind of separate himself from that franchise and take himself, or, you know, get taken a little bit more seriously as an actor. And I think if he does this movie, that will
replacing.
Go ahead.
He's replacing Shia LaBeouf as the Disney grad who tries to be serious and then just breaks all our hearts by ruining all our favorite franchises.
I mean, he's on that path. I hope the last doesn't come true. But in any case, Easy Money, pretty cool movie. It stars Joel Kinnaman, who's the guy who stars in that show The Killing on AMC. And he's also been cast as Alex Murphy in the new RoboCop reboot or remake or whatever. So that's part of the reason why I wanted to see this movie, is just to see what Joel Kinnaman had to offer. And he's really good in this film. He's a poor guy who wears like slick suits and stuff and greases his hair back. And he kind of tries to blend in with this upper class society. And it's basically like a kind of a Scarface-esque story of just, you know, drugs and organized crime. And he tries to work his way up the ladder and you know, impress these women that are, you know, way out of his league. And there's a lot of kind of intense, whatever, like negotiation scenes and shootouts and all kinds of stuff. So I don't really know how easy it's going to be for people to see this movie, because I believe Martin Scorsese just announced a couple weeks ago that he's like putting his support behind the film and opening it in a couple cities in the US in early July. So if you guys live in Los Angeles and want to check this movie out, or New York or some of the other like really big high profile cities in America, you can check your local listings, I guess. I think July 11th is the date that's sticking in my head for some reason, where they're going to be playing this movie in theaters just for, I don't know, maybe 1 week or a couple weeks or something like that. So check it out if you want to. It reminds me a little bit of the Pusher trilogy by Nicholas Winding Refn, who's the guy who directed Drive last year. And the Pusher trilogy is a series of movies that he did back in, I think, Denmark. Forgive me if that's incorrect. I'm not going to look it up. But, you know, it's like handheld and very kind of gritty and intense, and it's got this realistic style to it. Snap of Cash, a.k.a. Easy Money, is very much in the same vein. Should also mention that it's directed by Daniel Espinosa, who's the guy who did Safe House earlier this year. Tyler, did you see that one, the Ryan Reynolds, Denzel Washington movie?
No.
Okay, that one, I actually like that movie. So
I heard that was really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I think it should be, if not out on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever now, then sometime very soon, because it came out early this year. So,
right.
Yeah, I would recommend both Snap of Cash and Safe House, just to see what Daniel Espinosa's got going as a director. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. Safe House was his first American movie, but Snap of Cash is really kind of his calling card, the movie that kind of put him on the map as a filmmaker. So you can check that out if it's coming to a theater near you sometime in July. And with that, let's move on into our review of Presumed Innocent.
Carolyn Paulhemus was murdered last night. Some creep got into her place somehow and strangled her.
It looks like she was raped.
Rusty, I want you to handle this case personally. You're the only one around here I can trust. Just catch me a bad guy.
You're in charge of this investigation?
There are 150 lawyers down there. They couldn't find one who didn't sleep with her.
Find out which of the creeps she put away is out on parole.
She's dead, and you're still obsessing.
You were in Carolyn's apartment the night she was killed. We've got the fingerprint results. There's a call from your house to hers that night.
This is absurd.
All right, so Presumed Innocent came out in 1990, and it was directed by Alan J. Pakula. Alan J. Count Pakula. Stars
New nickname.
Ford, Brian Dennehy, Raul Julia, and a bunch of other people that we'll talk about in a little bit. But it's basically a Harrison Ford movie. He kind of runs the show here. Tyler, what did you think about Presumed Innocent?
Yeah, Brian Dennehy took some time off from the FX duology to show up as kind of a dick in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked Raul Julia, who was probably my favorite character either, even though he was hardly in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about human error. It's about the legal system. if you're interested in that kind of stuff. It really goes into the legal system aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have preferred more of what came at the end where they were, like, busting down doors. That was, like, the one instance where there was kind of some action, but not really. Mm-hmm. It was very, very procedural, but not in a fun way, like Boston Legal or something like that. Although, if you are into law, it's kind of an exciting movie. Like you said, Harrison Ford does carry the film. But I had some closer for this, but I don't. That's the end of my initial thought.
Wow, okay. I actually like this movie. I think it is a little slow. And the courtroom scenes at the end, it's kind of like A Few Good Men or something, where in A Few Good Men, if you've seen that movie, which I'm sure you have, it's kind of easy to see how that movie originated from a play. And this movie originated from a book, I believe, but it just seems like the staging and the acting and stuff and just how long those courtroom scenes go in the end, where there's not really a lot of interesting camera work. It's very simple, very like back and forth. I don't know, it slows the movie down a little bit, but I guess that's the point when things are supposed to be the most exciting, and I didn't necessarily find those sequences the most riveting, although Raul Julia as Harrison Ford's lawyer is really fantastic in the movie, and he only comes in, I don't know, in like the last third of the film or something.
Right.
But he does a great job. I mean, I've never seen him in anything, as far as I know, except for the Street Fighter movie that you like a lot.
Yes. Inexplicably. As General M. Bison. Inexplicably. There's plenty of explanations why I like that movie. He's also, he plays Gomez Adams in the Adams Family movies.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen those.
And I think I've seen him in a couple other things.
I missed those, yeah.
But I think he played, he usually has like the very, very upright, very dark, booming characters whenever he isn't character acting, I guess, as Gomez Adams or General M. Bison.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I have all these things that I want to say and I forget about it. Harrison Ford's character is basically presumed guilty, even though the movie is called Presumed Innocent. And talking about kind of like the dialogue, like you were saying, that's what I wanted to do, is build up on what you're saying with the dialogue. And it did feel like a stage play, even though it was a novel, very much like Glengarry Glen Ross, which was also a stage play where it was just like people, like four or five characters maybe,
mm-hmm.
and then them talking in like three different locales throughout the film. So it was either Harrison Ford's house, the offices in the courthouse, or the actual courtroom mm-hmm. in the courthouse. And then you had like the utilization of flashbacks, which really don't do much except to establish the character of the dead person,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was an interesting touch, because you kind of realize that she's kind of a bitch, or not a bitch. She's kind of mean.
Well, yeah.
And, she's kind power of hungry, and she likes to, she likes to basically step on people on the way up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't like using the word bitch because it's very gender based. When people do, guys can be assholes, bitches, it's kind of the same thing. Bitches and assholes.
You gotta be gotta be PC with it, and I appreciate that.
I'm just gonna start calling everybody assholes.
I kind of looked at this movie as like a modern noir, like a neo noir to some degree, because this chick, Carolyn, is totally like a femme fatale. You know, she just sleeps her way to the top, and she's really pretty ruthless when it comes to getting what she wants. As soon as she realizes that Harrison Ford is not going to attempt to take over the office of prosecuting attorney from Brian Dennehy's character, and she won't be able to benefit from that, she like just drops him and leaves him.
He gets wild.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you're talking about the flashbacks, like, it's a while before you see the flashback, probably like 45 minutes or something, where they mm-hmm. just kind of, like, allude to Harrison Ford's history with this woman. And also, by the way, a little side note, the fact that Bonnie Bedia, who played Mrs. McLean in the Die Hard movies.
Oh, that's right.
I knew her. That's Harrison Ford's wife in this movie. The fact that she knew about Ford's relationship with Carolyn. I keep mixing names.
Caroline. So, Carolyn?
No, it's Carolyn. Rusty is Harrison Ford's character. So,
Yes.
Rusty's relationship with Carolyn. The fact that she knew about that kind of surprised me, because a lot of times in movies like this, you know, it'll be like the protagonist trying to hide this affair that he had from everyone. But it seemed like a lot of people in this movie, more than normal, actually knew what had happened. So I thought
they knew he was banging around.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a refreshing touch, especially with, you know, him still being married to the wife. Like she kind of being not cool with it, obviously, because of what happens at the end. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you know, sticking with him, which Spoiler. You don't really see that often in movies like this either. So, where was I going?
You know, like, he's a good guy, just messed up multiple times.
Yeah.
I understood, like, the one time, like, the heat and the adrenaline of the case, like, just got him all soaked up, and it's like, oh, let's get into the office. And then he's like, hey, I'm free tonight, let's get some Chinese food. She's like, hey, buddy, I'm kicking you to the curb. I'm like, oh, Rusty. You gotta have some balls, man.
Yeah.
Like, drop that girl like a hat. Whoop. And he kept coming. And then that was kind of cool because at the very beginning he gets a note that says, I know it's you, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
No idea what that means.
I don't either.
I didn't even figure it out until the end. But yeah, that was kind of an interesting.
I still
like,
don't.
Here's what – it's basically like, here's the answer to the entire case at the very beginning, and then you're kind of like, oh man, I gotta know how this all works in. And but he burns it at the very beginning too, so it's like it's not going to come back. He doesn't even think for a second that this could have any meaning at all, and then it actually does.
What? Okay, hit me.
You want me to explain what it means?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I think this is what it means based on the information from the film that we just watched, presuming it's starring Harrison Ford. directed by Count Pucula. So the note says, I know it's you, stop it.
Yep.
And he goes, I don't know what that means. And so he burns it. Well, later in the flashbacks, you see that he's kind of very, clingy after she kind of breaks up with him. And he's like waiting outside her apartment and like trying to call her all the time. And so on and so forth. And then, like, they have their call records as part of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they show, he said, don't run my phone numbers because mm-hmm. it's like, leave me out of it because he knows he didn't do it. And there were some phone calls from like a couple months prior when they were working on a case with each other. But then there were calls coming from his house to her apartment leading up to the murder. So everyone was like, oh, well, he did it because all these phone numbers are, all these phone calls are coming in.
Oh, I think I did.
And it wasn't him. Yes. And so the note was referring to all the phone calls that she was getting. So I guess someone was calling from his house and not saying anything just to kind of see if she was going to pick up. Like, what time is she going to be in her apartment and, you know, and this and that.
Yeah.
And so she sends a letter to him.
Yeah, that's what it was. Because Ford said to Raul Julia at one point, like, I call her house sometimes just because I want to hear her voice, and I hang up like a scared kid or something like that. So that must be what the note was referring to. I was for some reason pegging the note as having more like sinister intentions, but it was just like because he was calling and not saying anything, which is creepy.
Right.
But
yeah. I still don't think leading up. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
But yeah,
it was anyway, like, I didn't think it was him, but I guess it was him.
Just like the way that the movie uses those flashbacks, like it takes a long time for us to get there because we kind of, you know, all the relationship is alluded to, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes into like a really long couple like series of flashbacks where it kind of explains what happened with Rusty and Carolyn. And you do kind of see at that point why he gets as crazy as he does. And she's basically a femme fatale. She kind of treats him terribly, but he, you know, it's his own fault for, first of all, cheating on his wife. And then second
of all, even though his wife is smoking.
Yeah. And also like,
what is up, John McClane's wife?
I mean, Bonnie Bedia was like the go-to wife at this time because Die Hard came out, what, 88? And this is 90? So like right in that time, she was like bouncing around from mega box office star to mega box office star. But anyway, Bradley Whitford is in this movie as well.
Yes, he was.
Which kind of caught me by surprise.
Rest in peace, good guys.
Paul Winfield was in the movie too. He's the black judge. He was in Terminator. He was in Cliffhanger. He was in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. A great character actor.
The guys with Chekhov that got the earwig.
The earworm things, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this movie is like filled with familiar faces. If you've ever you know watched a lot of movies that came out in the 90s or late 80s,
right.
It's just like a who's who of character actors here, which I really loved. A lot of these people I couldn't peg like where I'd seen them before, but when you look up their IMDb account, you're like, oh yeah, it's that guy. And I did appreciate Brian Dennehy, even though he was kind of a douche in this movie, especially because of the FX and FX2 duology, as you refer to it. We have a lot of love for those movies, apparently.
I love FX. I mean, it's a good legal movie, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of legal mumbo jumbo in it, but it's also kind of a cool political movie too, because Brian Dennehy's character is like an elected official,
mm-hmm.
and so he's up for re-election at the very beginning of the movie against some other guy that they don't like, and so he puts Rusty, Harrison Ford's character in Presumed Innocent 1990, he puts Rusty into place to basically find who killed one of his attorneys. And so he's like, I need this, I need that right away. And if I get elected, we'll keep working on it. But if I don't, I need it before the election so that it doesn't leak out and we lose, basically, because these new guys who we don't like will come in. Well, he ends up losing, so the new guys come in, the people that they don't like each other. So they're basically trying to frame Rusty, played by Harrison Ford. And at some point in the film, I guess they buy out or they convince Brian Dennehy's character to work for them, to basically switch sides.
Yeah.
So while he's Rusty's second in command to Dennehy at the beginning, he's now like,
it's him versus
stand against him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Saying that, oh, he volunteered for the case when he didn't really. He was like told to be on the case.
Right.
And all this other stuff. So everything's really working against Rusty, but you're still unclear on whether he did it or not until
right.
the end, which I think is kind of interesting because even when, and again, spoiler alert, when he's on the ferry with his cop buddy and they have the glass that's been missing the entire time, I'm like, holy shit, he did it. Like, what the hell? And, so it's kind of it's a slow roller coaster, but it's a roller coaster nonetheless. It's one that goes maybe 3 miles an hour, but there's still some ups and downs. It's like one of those kiddie ones that are safe for like babies.
Yeah, and it's one of those for like the majority of the movie, and then like the last 10 minutes, it shoots you out like the Incredible Hulk ride at Universal Studios or something. Like, it goes into this crazy.
I would love if they built a roller coaster that is so slow, like from the first 90% of the ride, and then just at the very end just shoots you from 0 to 60.
Just violently shakes you and spins you for
and
like
you crank to a stop.
For like 4 seconds and then you slam to a stop. Yeah. That's kind of what this movie was like. I mean, the ending, let's go ahead and talk about that. So they're in the trial for a majority of the movie. I guess that's not even true, because it takes 50
like
minutes for them. I wrote this down. It takes 50 minutes for them to figure out that the fingerprints on the glass belong to Harrison Ford. And as soon as they mention that there are fingerprints, you know, somebody's fingerprints are on this glass, we as the audience are like, okay, they're probably Harrison Ford's. Like,
right.
That's kind of how this story has to go for
and
it
the
to
fingerprints
be.
Are?
Brantley
Whitford's. Oh, from out of left field.
So it takes 50 minutes for the characters in the movie to catch up with what the audience already presumes.
That he's innocent?
Oh, ba-doom-ba. And then, basically from that point on, it's just the trial mixed in with some flashbacks, blah, blah, blah. Them kind of – there's this whole Leon Wells subplot, which is really strange.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But getting to the end – they, I guess, no, let's talk about the Leon Wells thing first. So what did you think about that? Like, it took me a long time to even realize what the significance of that was, because to me, it was like really unclear what they were doing.
It was, there was like information that was missing, and he finds it at the very beginning. He's like, something's missing here. And so you're like, okay, well, if you find this, you'll know, kind of, you'll explain the situation and what's happening, why she died, why all this stuff is going down all of a sudden, but they don't find anything about it until like the very end.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're wondering, you're like, okay, why haven't you found that missing file? Or he does, he gives it to him, Dennehy gives it to him, but he doesn't, like, it's all in code. Like, they name names that don't exist and characters that don't exist, and they pay off somebody. They don't know who. But then the cop friend of Rusty's finds like old documents that show that whoever this individual was paid off somebody whose probation officer was Carolyn, and that whoever was running the case was the guy who came into office after Brian Dennehy did. Very confusing. But like, they finally, like, the cop guy just shows up out of nowhere. He calls him on the phone. He's like, yeah, it's your uncle. I found Leon. Let's go down to the subway where people live, apparently, and bust his door down. And then, so it's just this black guy who's in like a wife beater and no pants, from what I recall.
Like sweatpants or something.
Yeah. And so they just bust into his, like, his broom closet of an apartment, and they're like, hey, tell us what we need to know. And he's like smoking a cigarette, and then the guy hits him in the face. He's like, why do you do that? And he's like, just tell us what we need to know. And he's like, okay. And he tells him everything about how he had paid off the judge.
Yeah.
From the trial that Rusty was in. So that, yeah, the big blow up, but then they don't even use it.
Right. And that's the thing, is like, I think I don't know if the judge like knew that they had found that guy and kind of were in on it, and that's why the whole thing was deemed a mistrial, or if it just happened to be kind of a stroke of luck where Raul Julia figured out that the Asian doctor didn't know what he was talking about.
Right.
Or that they had kind of like put these...
Oh yeah, I forgot I wrote that.
They had, like, the Asian doctor and the guys that they don't like had kind of like faked a bunch of evidence or something against Harrison Ford. So I don't know. Yeah, it gets really confusing and kind of... It's not confusing to the point where you can't figure out what's going on. It's just the movie kind of releases these pieces of information at weird times where I wish I would have known a little bit earlier than it decided to give me. You know what I mean? So anyway.
Yeah, and he even talks to Raul Julia at the end, Sandy, I think his name was. He's like, you knew about this, and you were holding it over the judge's head. He's like, so you basically blackmailed him.
Yeah.
So like, Harrison Ford thinks that Raul Julia blackmailed the judge and that the mistrial was actually a result of blackmail.
Right.
And Raul Julia goes, no, I didn't really blackmail him, because even though I knew that he had been paid off in some cases, like, he's not a bad judge. Like, he's not an unjust judge. So the mistrial was in reality just because they really don't have anything against him.
Yeah.
It was just that, you know, there was no reason for the judge to take it to trial because, you know, everyone makes mistakes and whatever. Human error probably has created some potholes for Harrison Ford in his life. And why go over those potholes when the judge could, you know, basically just have his own potholes? And so he's just kind of like, let's avoid the potholes altogether.
Yeah. So
it was kind of like that human error kind of aspect of the film I thought was really interesting, because everyone in the movie's pretty much done something wrong, some not as bad as others, but you know, it's this whole like, people aren't perfect, so like these little pencil-nosed geeks that are bringing fake evidence against Rusty, they're the worst culprits because they're taking advantage of the system to gain some type of political advantage.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like what the movie is getting at, really, is that like, the system is broken. Like, this thing that Harrison Ford has spent his entire life working for and protecting, like,
I don't think it's the system, Ben. I think it's the people in charge of the system. I say that all the time, when people go, oh, government's broken, bro, government's broken. And it's like, well, no, the structure's fine. It's the people in office that are messing it up. So it's like, the judicial system isn't broken. It's the people that are taking advantage of it.
Right.
Need to probably get kicked out.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, he's got that opening narration where it's just like an empty courtroom and he's talking and he says something like, if they can't find the truth, what's our hope of justice? And then at the end, it's like, I doubt anybody could have guessed what was going to happen at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
So, you know,
in the people's court.
So it gets to the end, and like you said, you know, especially after the buddy had the glass the whole time, and Ford is like, out there building a fence or whatever, and he finds this bloody hammer with Carolyn's hair, like, still on it, like, caked on.
Right.
And you're like, he reacts, like, with a straight face, so you're not, like, he has, like, no reaction to it, really.
No,
so,
he had kind of a reaction to it. That was what I was going to think, too, because I was thinking, because they didn't pan up to his face yet, and he was looking at it, and I was like, oh, man, based on his face, like, it's either he did it, which I thought he had done it already because of the glass from the previous scene. But then he does kind of have a look of disbelief on his face where it's like, okay, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he's just seeing this for the first time. So maybe I read into it a little too much.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I read it as like I wasn't sure. Like even when he went down to the basement and was like washing it off, I wasn't sure.
Right.
If he was cleaning up his own evidence that he forgot about. Because he said something to the wife early on in the movie, like, they're looking for a murder weapon, but they're not going to find it because I wouldn't be dumb enough to bring it home.
Right. Or like, something. Even they know I'm not dumb enough to bring it home.
Yeah, and I was wondering if, like, he just said that because he, like, reverse outsmarted them. Like, they know I'm not dumb enough to do this, so I'm going to do it, and then they won't think I did it or something like that. So anyway, it's revealed. And I wrote this down in my notes, like, Ford did it, ! What a ballsy move. And then I had to like cross that out and be like, wait, Bonnie Bedia.
Brian Dennehy did it. Oh, you put Bonnie. Okay.
And she, like, they play it really cool too, because he's standing there washing the blood and stuff off. And she comes down the stairs and says, I did it, I fooled them all. And he kind of like turns, and then she says, they think I'm qualified. And she's talking about like her dissertation or her like interview with the university or something like that. So with the first part of that sentence, you're like, oh, she did it, what? And then she goes, they think I'm qualified. And then you're like, wait, did she do it? Does she see what's going on? And then she kind of has this horrified look on her face, like, she sees him with the weapon, and then you think that she's horrified that he did it, and she runs upstairs, and then he, like, follows her up there, and then she just confesses in, like, a five-minute monologue that she actually did the whole thing, and that the destroyer is destroyed. And
yeah, she really didn't say, I did it. She just explains a situation.
Yeah,
which I think was pretty clever.
She speaks in, like, the third person. She says, like, yeah. She does this, she does that.
Right.
So
like, wow, you really know how a lawyer works, because otherwise you can't really take that into, it's like, oh, I'm just telling a story, bro.
Yeah.
I'm just telling a story. So
that might actually be speaking the second person. I think speaking the third person would have to say, like,
you would be referring to yourself, but by a proper name.
My name,
like,
yeah.
She would, yeah. Like, Bonnie did this.
Yeah, right. But what did you think about that, about the fact that she did it at the end? Would you have preferred it if Harrison Ford did it, or what did you think about the whole ending?
I'm kind of ashamed of myself that I didn't see it coming, because it's such, again, there were like five characters in this movie who really could have done it well. It seriously could have been narrowed down to the wife the whole time, or the butler, or Nat, the little kid. But yeah, I mean,
I'm just glad to see you guys happy. I killed that woman with a giant hammer.
They just do that really weird flashback where they remember all the things that the kid says, like, out of context, and then it all folds into, like, I'm just glad you guys are happy. And he's like, oops, I must have dialed the wrong number. He's like, Mommy, what a nice glass.
Man, we
like,
should...
Oh my god, Nat did it!
We should get a kid who looks like him and reshoot this movie and re-edit it where he actually did it at the end.
I think we should just take the parts where the kid said stuff and just re-edit it into a flashback at the very end. Instead of her giving the monologue, they could just see each other at the table and then, like, flashback to what the kid said throughout the whole movie.
And then they both have horrified looks on their faces, and then it just cuts down to the hammer and then cut to black.
Yes. To address your question, though, I think a lot of people would have been really angry had Harrison Ford done it, because he goes through this entire movie and you're like, oh man, he's presumed innocent. 1990, directed by Count Bakula. I think people would have really been let down. I think it wouldn't really have been a twist ending, because it would have just been like, oh, he got away with it. He really did do it. He's a bad guy. He's the antagonist. And now I feel like I've been cheated. and I'm never going to see a Harrison Ford movie ever again.
That's the thing, though, is like, I think you're right. I think a lot of people would have had that reaction, but I don't like that people judge actors based on their character's actions. Like, I think if Harrison Ford's character would have done it at the end, I would have been fine with that, and I would have actually thought it was a really ballsy move for Ford to take that role, because,
right.
You know, he's got this good guy persona.
Yeah,
this heroic,
that's what makes the money. That's what makes the dollars.
And it's just like, I can't fault him for wanting to do something different and like key, especially in a movie like this where it does keep the audience guessing for the majority of the movie, and then for them to reveal that he actually was the one behind it all. I feel like that would have been maybe a stronger ending. But
I like the idea that actors like look through scripts and say like, oh, this character, like I don't think I would, I don't imagine myself being this kind of character.
Yeah.
And that kind of bleeds into the characters they do pick. Mm-hmm. So you go, oh, well, Harrison Ford only picks like heroes and presidents and, you know, Millennium Falcon captains and things like this.
Right.
It's like, oh, he must really be like that because he chooses to be these characters as opposed to like Alan Rickman, who always chooses to be like a bad guy, which is fine because he probably is like the really the nicest guy in the world. He just loves to act as a bad guy.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of interesting, but I was kind of let down that his family wasn't in danger and presumed innocent.
Yeah.
I like when Harrison Ford requests nor yells, where's my family?
Give me back my family.
This isn't fireproof. We're on Air Force One. Witness.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of the stuff that I wrote down. Also, I wanted to give a shout out really quickly to the really cool music, the piano theme by John Williams in this movie. I didn't realize I was busy writing notes during the opening credits, so I missed the part where it said music by John Williams, and then I didn't realize it until after the movie. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, not many people know that Ben writes down every single credit at the very beginning of the movie into his notes.
I wasn't writing the credits in my notes. I was writing during. Anyway. You want to do some concluding thoughts then on Presumed Innocent?
Yeah, Brian Dennehy, show up to the plate next time. Don't be such an ass. Miss McClain, looking good as always. Harrison Ford, you really know how to carry a film, especially when you cry, though don't cry ever again. Bradley Whitford coming back for good guys? Question mark. I hope so.
This
no Colin Hanks this time.
Was produced by Sidney Pollack, and I feel like he's done a lot of movies like this. The Firm with Tom Cruise comes to mind as something that I've recently talked about on this podcast. Something with like a legal twist and really like a kind of a narrative that does go through a lot of twists and turns. Relatively slow, but a good payoff at the end. Just kind of a solid movie, you know? I feel like that was kind of Sidney Pollack's bread and butter as a producer and a director, too. He directed a bunch of stuff before he passed away in, like, 2010 or something. But I think Presumed Innocent is one of those movies. It's a solid movie. It's got a bunch of great character actors in it. Brian Dennehy, we didn't really talk about that much, but he, like, holds his own against Ford. There's that scene in the elevator when he's, like, basically yelling at him in his face. And Harrison Ford is kind of a force to be reckoned with in the movie world. And Brian Dennehy was like, I don't give a shit. I'm just going to go off on you. And he became, like, a really intimidating figure in this movie. So
good.
I want to give him some props. Just again, Raul Julia, really fantastic here. If you guys haven't seen a lot of his work, check this out.
Dios, Raul.
And also, we should mention that today is June 24th, and I believe Presumed Innocent is only available on Netflix Instantly until July 1st. So you've only got like a week or so left to check that out. So
take advantage of that.
Yeah, do it. It's good. I don't know why you would want to at this point after having listened to the entire movie be revealed for you on this podcast.
That's true.
But
we should probably say that at the very beginning and just be like, yeah, you should definitely watch this movie. Now, spoiler country.
That makes a lot more sense. Maybe we'll start doing
that. We're not very good at this, are we?
It only took us 94 episodes to figure that out. All right. So wait,
you're telling me to see this movie that I know everything about now? You guys are the greatest. We've never heard that. It's a surprise that we've never heard that from any of our listeners. So now we know why.
All right, well, you want to rev up the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
I sure do. Let me pull that comically large lever and pull out the old Apple. Oh, maybe I'll pull out the Apple II first and then pull the lever.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, we're going to be watching a film called Paper Moon, not to be confused with Paper Mario.
I don't think anyone would confuse it with Paper Mario.
Really? You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Paper Moon stars Ryan O'Neal, Tatum O'Neal as well. I'm looking here. It's available on Netflix Watch Instantly, apparently until August 16th, 2036. So there's only 8,819 days left. So make sure that you watch that as quickly as possible, because I don't know how much time you've got left.
ASAP. So. I mean, 26 years come and go with no, like, nobody's business.
Yeah, man, Paper Moon. All right, well, yeah, we're looking forward to checking that one out. If you guys have seen Paper Moon, shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about it. Leave us a voicemail. You can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message at 904-469-6566. Let us know what you thought about Presumed Innocent if you watched that as well, or any of the movies that we've talked about in the past, even going all the way back to Outland episode 2. Might as well, right?
Nice. Not including episode 1, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a Batman one, so I feel
like that's true. Everybody loves Batman.
Yeah.
But yeah, forget that. Forget that. Just start with Outland.
So,
which I might say still, like, in the personal best,
mm-hmm.
like, if I was making a top 10 best episodes
mm-hmm.
of this show, mm-hmm. Probably in the top 5 would be Outland.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and we've done some good episodes.
We have. That's actually a good idea. So if you guys are listening and longtime listeners and whatever, we've got our 100th episode coming up sometime in the next few weeks. And
August 6th is what I'm planning to do.
Right. So if you guys want to do like a top 10 or anything like that, you know, like your favorite moments of the podcast, and just email us or leave us a message or something. Let us know what your favorite episode was, or I don't know, favorite guest or anything. Kind of, you know, make up your own category. Just send us some love for the 100th episode. That would be cool.
And I'll try to corral some clips from those episodes. So if you guys send them in, we can find the funnier parts of those and put them into a little piece.
Yeah, maybe like a short clip show. It's only like 3 or 4 minutes or something. But
yeah. Ben, can I tell you something else? Can I tell you about something, a little event that's coming up?
Yes, please do.
It's a little thing called Get Us 30,000 Fans on Facebook, which is, if you didn't already guess from the title of the event, it's an event meant solely to try to get us 30,000 fans on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain stats as an administrator that say, okay, you only have 80 fans. And then I think it says, like, ha-ha in parentheses. And it goes, of all the friends of the fans, like, if all 80 fans asked their friends to like us on Facebook, we'd have, like, 30,000 people talking about the show, talking about the movies we watch, giving their discussion,
mm-hmm.
Sending their arguments, so on and so forth. So, and that's something I really want to see, Ben. How about you?
Yeah, totally.
All right, so if you join this event, if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/mattressnewmovies, you'll see the event, and it has a great big picture of the Ginger Dead Man, which we've promised to review. Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver. We will review that after midnight style if we can get, what did I say, like 600 fans by our 100th episode?
I think, yeah, that's what you said.
600 fans out of 30,000, I think it's damn near possible to get that done, especially for a film of such caliber as The Ginger Dead Man, Saturday Night Cleaver, Ginger Dead Man 3. I don't know if Gary Busey is the voice of the Ginger Dead Man. I know he was in one of the installments of the Ginger Dead trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Or as you like to call it, the Gingerverse.
Right, the Ginger Deadverse, yep.
So take a look at that. Send us your thoughts. Join. Invite your friends to join.
Yeah.
Do all that stuff. I'm done. Cool. I'm done advertising now.
Okay. Well, you guys can also subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. If you haven't already, just go to the iTunes store and type in GeekTyrant-NJNM. You'll find us there. You can also click on the iTunes subscribe button that's right underneath this player if you're listening to this, if you're streaming it on NotJustNewMovies.com. You can check us out on Facebook, as Tyler mentioned, Facebook.com/NotJustNewMovies, and on Twitter at Twitter.com/ Twitter.com/NJNM podcast.
And also, if you don't like iTunes, we have a direct download section right at the notjustnewmovies.com.
We do. So you can throw that on your Zune and watch, listen to it, and nobody will know.
Or your CDRWs, if you like to listen to them on a compact disc.
Indeed. So let's finish up the character name game. The character's name was Kate Lloyd. Tyler, do you have any idea what movie that character's from?
Kate Lloyd, was that happen to be played by the girl who was Alex Mack in the Mystery Files of Alex Mack? Or no? The Mixed Up Files of Alex Mack?
Secret Files,
that's right. It was the Mixed Up
Secret
Files
Life,
of Shelby
Secret
Wu.
Life of Alex Mack, I think.
Yeah, and then Shelby Wu had the Mixed Up Files or the Mixed Up.
Yeah.
Was Kate Lloyd played by that character?
No, but you did mention Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter at the start of the show.
Did, but I also mentioned I don't know anybody who's in that, so it's really not helpful.
I'm going to tell you that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in that movie.
Okay.
And that's the actress, so if you can figure out the connection.
Okay. Lloyd, was she in
Kate Lloyd.
A movie about nerds?
Scientists are in this movie, so maybe you could say yes to that.
Okay, all right. I heard scientists. The first thing I thought was scientists working on monkeys.
No, scientists working in a cold, cold environment.
Okay. I know the answer, but I'm going to give facetious guesses nonetheless. Is Kurt Russell in this film?
He is not, but it is a remake of a very famous Kurt Russell movie.
Okay. Does he escape from Los Angeles? Or no, excuse me. Does he escape from New York?
No.
Am I losing the trail here?
You are, yeah.
Okay. Is it a film or possibly a remake of a film that we've actually done on the Not Just Me Movies podcast?
It is, yes.
Oh, man. Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, I'm sorry. So close. It's actually Weekend at Bernie's 2.
The Price is Right reference right there. The Thing 2011.
Yes, indeed. The Thing.
Oh, nice. Too many clues to go wrong there.
All right. Well, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, one of the highlights of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So that's out in theaters right now if you guys want to check that out.
Oh, it's not Abraham Lincoln?
No, she plays Mary Todd Lincoln. So
did you check out that 8-bit Ham Lincoln Vampire Hunter video game thing?
I did, yeah. It was pretty cool. I like that.
That needs to be made. You know, somebody's making a game, and I haven't checked it out yet, but it was on Reddit.
Yes.
They're making a game based on the Community episode.
It is so awesome. I downloaded it and played it when they were in the early stages, so like you could go through most of the game levels, but you couldn't actually really do much. You couldn't go into like the area where like the village and the any of the rooms or anything, because they were still working on developing the game. But at this point, it might be more completed or whatnot. So yeah Tyler's
forget that. Let's just make 8-bit Ham Lincoln Vampire.
Tyler's talking about, there's an episode of Community where all the characters go into like whatever 8-bit or 16-bit characters and turns it into like a video game, and they play this game, and somebody in the internet community has decided to recreate the game so we all can just download it and play it, and you can choose your character and stuff. It's really, really cool. So check that out. Just do a search for it on Google.
I'll try to find the link, and maybe we can put it in the post.
Yeah. So really quickly, let's just go back and forth and tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet this week, and we'll wrap this one up.
All right. Yeah. You want me to go first?
Yes. Go ahead.
Sure. The SolarSentinel.blogspot.com. You see that new Batman adventure, Ben?
I did. It's really good, actually. People should check that out. Yeah. It's Ghosts Among Us.
Ghosts Among Us part one. And I wasn't going to work on part two for a while, but I think I'm going to. Just like a real editor, I'm going to move up part two as the top priority, and also part three. So I'm going to finish out that whole series, and then I'll go back to writing stuff that no one else reads.
All right. More Jaws the Ride interviews, please.
Though that series done. People are calling for it, but I have to say that series is over with. I'm sorry. I blew the shark up. Like, there's nothing. There is a Jaws 2.
There is.
Okay, there's always the possibility then.
And then you've got to do
Jaws 4 the Revenge.
You've got to do a third series in 3D. Awesome. And yeah, you guys can also track down Tyler on our Twitter page at NJNM Podcast. if you want to converse with him there. You guys can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. You can find me writing every day on geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. We actually did a Geek Tyrant podcast yesterday, and it's up at geektyrant.com. It's the first one in like months, 2 months, 3 months maybe. So you guys can listen to that, subscribe to that podcast in iTunes if you want. And yeah, that's pretty much going to bring this episode to a close. Music for this show will come courtesy of the Presumed Innocence score, courtesy of John Williams himself. So thanks for listening, everybody. And as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching Paper Moon next week. So check that out on Netflix Instant while you can. Only 8,000 days remaining. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
What a colossal blunder.